Hello, everybody, and welcome to Soccer 101, the show in which we answer the soccer-specific questions you never knew you had. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and on this episode, we're diving into one of the happier things that can happen to a club: promotion. What are the approaches to getting promoted and then staying up? What are the obvious benefits and the less obvious drawbacks? What changes from the fan perspective? And much, much more. Here with me to discuss promotion is a man whose club was recently promoted. It's Graham Ruffin. Hi, Graham.
Hello, Taylor Rockwell. Yes, listeners might think that I suggested this topic.
And
it was, in fact, Taylor Rockwell who suggested this this topic. I did not push back on that suggestion. Quite happy to talk about my team being promoted, my team being successful for once. It doesn't happen very often.
That is true. This was my idea. And I did envision it being a sort of basic conversation about promotion, informed by what your experience is and will be, and how you think things will play out. Because it's a really, on the surface, a very obvious question of, like, what happens when your club gets promoted? Well, you go up to the next level and then you see what happens. And that is sort of, I guess, where we should start, Graham. When we talk about promotion, we talk about a team in a lower division, being in one of the spots or one of the places that ends up, moving you up to the higher division.
Yeah, exactly. So I imagine most listeners will know what promotion is, just because it is such a key part of the soccer landscape. But just in case there is anyone out there who isn't familiar with this concept, in soccer, promotion is when the best team or one of the best teams in one league is transferred to a higher league in the pyramid structure, as you mentioned there, Taylor. So let's use Burnley as an example. They clinched the English Championship trophy this week. The league above the Championship is the Premier League, of course. And so next season, they will be in the Premier League. And of course, intrinsically tied to promotion is relegation, the other side of that coin, where the worst or one of the worst teams in a league drops down a league. So if Southampton finish bottom of the Premier League this season, that is currently the position they are in, they will go down to the Championship. So you can't have promotion without relegation, because obviously the leagues have to stay the same size season on season, unless you're MLS, and then you just throw this whole concept out the window and you just keep making the league bigger.
What could go wrong with that model? And then you have various approaches to promotion and relegation based on the league. But in England, let's say, stick with the Burnley one. So you'll have the top two automatically promoted. Then you have third, fourth, fifth, and sixth in a sort of playoff series, with the winner also getting promoted. And then the bottom three clubs in the Premier League going down. In the Bundesliga, you will have a relegation playoff to go up, and then also a relegation playoff where one Bundesliga club tries to stay up and a Zweite Bundesliga club tries to take their place. So you can have different formats, but ultimately you want to get promoted because there are some pretty obvious benefits, Graham, starting with money. Money tends to go up pretty drastically when you are promoted.
Yeah, so this is perhaps the most obvious benefit of winning promotion. That is the financial rewards and the prize money that, we'll start with the prize money that comes with going up a division. So that the prize money, we're using the Championship as an example here quite a bit, but the prize money for the winner of the EFL Championship is reported to be around, this season is reported to be worth around £42.7 million. So that includes a basic award of £7.3 million, which I guess you could say is pure prize money, then a solidarity payment of £4.5 million, and a share, the largest share, generally the largest share of the EFL broadcast deal, which is worth £31 million to each team. My club, Stirling Albion, we're getting nowhere near that amount of money. Winners of Scottish League Two as of last weekend, we will get £67,500 for winning that title. And for promotion, I know that doesn't sound a lot, particularly when you compare it to the world of the Premier League and the Championship, but that is a not insignificant amount for a club of our size. Going up the Scottish pyramid a little bit further, if you win promotion from the Scottish Championship to the Scottish Premiership, it's £500,000 in prize money, which is actually more than I thought it would be for that level. That is quite a jump. In some of the bigger leagues around Europe, so not Scottish League Two, promotion could also get you a bump in TV revenue. So if you win promotion to the Premier League, you're getting a cut of that $3 billion broadcast revenue pie that gets cut up every season and handed out to the 20 member clubs. Of that $3 billion deal, each club was guaranteed at least 31 $39 million in equal share payments, $58 million in international TV payments, and $7 million in central commercial payments as well. So you're basically getting $105 million per team, regardless of position, when you go up to the Premier League. So obviously, that is a big reward. Obviously, the Premier League is the most lucrative league in the world, so these numbers will be less if you win the Segunda Division in Spain, for example, or Ligue 2 in France. But the principle remains the same. The top divisions have the biggest TV deals, and so if you go into those divisions, you're going to get some of that sweet, sweet money.
With the prices of players these days, is £40 million like that much money? I know that sounds ludicrous to somebody whose club is getting £67,500. But when you look at the way Premier League clubs spend money, and also the sort of awareness that if you are a Premier League club trying to buy a player, there's going to be basically a tax because clubs just know you have more money, they can get more out of you. In some ways, I almost feel like that isn't as much money as I might have expected it to be when you get promoted into that money-making league that is the Premier League.
I think when you factor in all the sort of commercial payments, so the number here was $105 million per team, and that includes central commercial payments and international rights. And I imagine that number probably gets topped up by things like merchandise as well, and being able to sell bigger sponsorship deals if you're in the Premier League, if we're using the Premier League as an example. If you look through the promoted teams and what they spend in the transfer market, I'd imagine unless you're Nottingham Forest, there aren't many that are spending $100 million in the summer transfer window. So I guess that is quite a big bump. But I agree, for the Manchester United's, the Chelsea's, the Arsenal's of this world, that isn't a huge amount of money. And that maybe gives us an insight as to why there was the drive to create the Super League, and why there is that internal tension between these clubs and the Premier League and UEFA, because they look at maybe what NFL teams get or other sporting leagues are able to attract. And actually, it's not all that much.
Agreed. I'm glad you talked about the sponsorships, though, for a moment, because with a bigger league, with like the Premier League, and having more cameras on you, there is going to be, I think, an easier time of selling sponsorships. I think more companies will want to be involved, so there is more money to be made on that side. And then also, you're just going to have a bigger gate, I think, broadly speaking. I'm assuming that will apply to Sterling in a higher division, but Burnley going up, now you're going away to Old Trafford, or you're going away to the West Ham Stadium, the Olympic Stadium, or Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, where bigger attendance means you're going to get a little bit more match day revenue on the away days, and certainly you're more likely to sell out your home games as well.
Yeah, so the home games is where the big impact of that would be, because with league games you don't get any of the away ticket money.
Oh, am I thinking of cup games?
Yeah, cup games is so that if you draw, so for instance, last season, Stirling Albion, and this won't be the last mention of Stirling Albion in this show, we drew Rangers at Ibrox. That was huge for us, because then we get half of Ibrox ticket money. And actually, I think that has been a factor in our success this season. I think we've had a bit of a tangible reward from that. But yeah, league games, it would be if you sell out home league games, which obviously still happens generally if you go up a division. For Stirling Albion, TV revenue certainly isn't a consideration, but attendances certainly are. And actually, that's almost certainly where the biggest financial benefit will be for us. So we're going into a league with bigger clubs who will bring more fans to Forth Bank. We're also going into a league with our two traditional rivals in it. So Falkirk and Alloa will bring at least 1,000 fans to games. Falkirk will bring probably 2,000 fans. They're quite a big club. So compare that to the 100 fans a match like Forfar we're bringing to games, like in the league that we've just won. That is a big material difference. So that's 3,600 extra fans just from Falkirk games alone in one season. So we'll have two home games against them in a season. £14 a ticket, that's an extra £50,000 just from home games against Falkirk. So remember I spoke about that £67,000 prize money. That's going to be less than the additional revenue we're going to get from higher attendances in the higher league.
So promotion, broadly speaking, means more money. Graham, the question then becomes, how do clubs use that money? And there are a variety of ways they can. Some clubs will stick with the squad that got them promoted as much as they can. If they have a ton of on loan players, maybe they'll try to make some of those deals permanent.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll have to replace a few of them here and there. Then you can have clubs wholesale changing or bringing in many, many new faces like Nottingham Forest have done. I think sometimes it depends on if you're going to stick with your style of play. If you want to be an expansive possession team in the championship, it might be a little bit harder to do that in the Premier League. Just ask Fulham. Even if you do retool. So there's lots of sort of areas where you can spend that money when it comes to your actual squad, and then you can use that money to improve training facilities or academy facilities or even the grounds themselves, so that maybe you end up making more money long term. Lots of different approaches to how you spend that money. Graham, for Sterling for a moment, what would you like to see them do? Because it's not, you know, the Premier League money, as you've already said, but there is more money to be had in a higher level. What would you like to see them do so that they improve things, but also manage to stay in that division next season?
So I would categorize three different approaches in terms of team building. And Taylor, you kind of outlined them there, but I would give them three titles. So I would say one is continuity, which is where you believe in the team that got you promoted, and they're the ones that are going to keep you up next season, and that's risky in its own way because you might regret not improving while you had the chance. Then the other approach would be half and half, where you keep the core of the promotion winning team together, but you add quality in some key areas. And then the third approach I have named just Nottingham Forest, which is where you spend money like it's going out of fashion, completely rebuild your team, forget just how many players you have actually signed, and then probably get relegated anyway, which is the way their season is going. For Sterling Albion, I certainly want the half and half approach, and encouragingly, that seems to be the road we're going down. So we have signed, at this point, I think maybe four key players in that team to new contracts. Most crucially, we have signed Dale Carrick to a new contract for next season. He scored 26 goals for us this season, so obviously a very important part of the team. But there is more to consider, and you're right, Taylor, in mentioning what is... You need to determine what the right approach is when you win a promotion, because instantly you have that flip of the script where you're going from being a winning team in a league, and obviously the demands of that are very different, to going up a division, and basically you're going to be a losing team in one way, shape or form. It's just about how many games you lose and whether you can stay in that division. And so Sterling Albion this season, we've played a very attacking 4-4-2. Dale Carrick and Robert Thompson as a front two. We've hit wingers up and up high in the pitch as well. And so I am concerned that there's going to be a big hole in midfield, and we're not going to be able to do that in the higher division. And so we're going to have to change our approach entirely. And I think it might be Dale Carrick up front on his own, maybe pack another body into that central midfield, maybe a little bit more work rate from the wingers. So we are going to have to determine that. I think in terms of what players you go for, you might want to target some of the best players from the division that you've just left. And I know I've personally been watching teams when it became apparent that Sterling Albion were going to win the title. I have started watching teams that we're playing in these last few weeks and thinking, oh, we could use him, or I wonder what his contract situation is. So you might want to take the best of the division you've just won, or maybe you want veterans who have succeeded in the higher division. Maybe it's loan deals for better players, given that you can now offer loan players a better division, a higher platform to prove themselves in. So there are a number of different ways that you can spend that money. As you mentioned, infrastructure as well can be an area where that additional revenue, that prize money, might allow you to do some new things. So that could be stadium improvements, could be improvements to the training ground. I know this isn't quite the same thing, but I was listening to Gas on one of the Tuesday shows saying the Red Bulls took the Jose Altidore money and they built their new training facility using that money. So that's obviously a player sale rather than a promotion, but it's still taking something immediate, you know, a one-off influx of cash into the club and turning it into something that will have a long-term benefit for the club. So you could do something like that either through infrastructure, or you could maybe grow the academy. You could hire more coaches at youth level, and then the bargain you're making there is that you're going to get more talented youngsters coming through, but maybe that takes 5 to 10 years to start having an impact on the first team. And then even then, it's not guaranteed that there will be any sort of impact. So there are a number of ways to spend and act in general after you win promotion.
Do you think generally speaking, it's easier to get players in on loan when you move up that division, because now it's a higher standard. Maybe there's going to be more eyes, and maybe it's an easier sell to the parent club of maybe a younger talent who could be breaking through but just needs those reps, needs those minutes.
I think that is certainly the case in a lot of instances. There is a flip side of it as well, where maybe it is a lightweight winger, right? And I'm thinking of a very specific example with Sterling Albion, Kai Fotheringham, who was brilliant for us this
season. I have his transfer market page open right now. Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't come to us if we are battling relegation from League One, because we're not going to be as an expansive team. He's not going to see as much of the ball. We're not going to be a winning team. The onus will be very different on us in that league. And so maybe Dundee United, if they're smart about it, look at us and think we're not as good a fit for him as a winning team at the top of the table in League Two. So, yeah, there's two different cases to be made. League One is a stronger league. If you have, I can imagine if it's a central midfielder or a central defender or a defender in general, then maybe you can attract better players in those positions. But attacking players, maybe clubs with young players, they want to send them down to lower divisions where they will play for more dominant teams that will see more of the ball.
Transfermarkt does have his value of around €200,000. Graham, should Stirling go all in and just make a big money bid for Kai Fotheringham?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have to sell essentially every player that we have. We might even have to sell the stadium and just every bit of inventory in the stadium as well. But it'll be worth it if we just have one single player, Kai Fotheringham, yeah.
I think we have slowly found ourselves moving into the potential drawbacks to promotion, which is an odd thing to say about. You've won the title, you're moving up a division, there's going to be more money and more eyes and better facilities and all that good stuff. At the same time, there is that corresponding threat of, we can't play the style we were playing. We cannot be this expansive, open team, or we will get crushed and immediately relegated. Maybe we don't have the quality to execute certain styles of play that we did previously, so we do have to change things up. And so from a fan perspective, you might end up getting less aesthetically pleasing football, yeah, albeit in a higher division.
Absolutely. And this is the interesting inversion of the thrill of being promoted. The reality for fans, and I guess players as well, is you know, it can be very different, that reality. And promotion is this weird thing. I've already kind of referenced this, but it's this weird thing where one season you're a winning team and then the next season you're a losing team, even though you have the same players and the manager and everything. And Norwich City are maybe a good example of that. Every time they go up from the Championship to the Premier League, they seem to come straight back down. And I'm personally preparing for it next season. I'm hopeful that we'll stay in League One, but this season I've seen us lose once in the 25 matches that I've been to in person, and next season I expect that script will be flipped completely and I'll see more defeats than wins. So that is the paradox of promotion. Obviously fans are ambitious and they want to see the team as in as high a division as possible, but would they actually have more fun in a lower division? I mean, have I had more fun this season watching Stirling Albion win a title and win loads of games and play attractive, entertaining, attacking football? Have I had more fun this season than I will have next season, where invariably there will be a game half-time at Montrose or Airdrie where we're 3 or 4 nil down and I'm wondering what's the point of all this? You know, sometimes that is the case. And sometimes a team can be promoted too early as well, ahead of schedule. So what happens then is the jump up a division is too much for a team that is still in development, and then the fall back down can be pretty catastrophic. So the team that springs to mind for me in this regard is Blackpool, who got unexpectedly promoted to the Premier League during the 09-10 season. They spent beyond their means to stay there. They went straight back down to the Championship, and then they went down to League One as well, and then they went down to League Two because of the knock-on effect. And that can all be traced back to a team that overachieved essentially in getting promoted from the Championship to the Premier League. So yeah, promotion is obviously great in the moment. I'm not saying fans don't want to win promotion. Of course they do. They're ambitious. But there can often be a cost to it as well.
Yeah, a literal cost as well, because if you're going up, that might mean the tickets are going to be more expensive. Maybe the food, the concessions, maybe those prices go up to make things a little bit more easy for the club. Graham, this season, what's the longest you've waited for a pie?
Well, there's a game earlier in the season I waited a whole match and still didn't get one at the end. And that was at a Stirling Albion game as well. Uh-oh. They sold out. But
Like, in a line, what's the longest you've queued, to use your people's parlance?
So, 20 minutes I queued at Albion Rovers once for a pie.
And how would you feel if that became the norm? Or if it was like, you're in there for the entirety of halftime, or you have to get there 15 minutes earlier for a game. Are you going to be annoyed? Is there going to be a part of you that's looks at the people who are now buying pies and thinks, you all weren't here last year. Why weren't you here last year? Why are you here now? You're inconveniencing me.
So I was talking to the guys that I go to Albion games with. I sit sit around at Albion games. We've had some big crowds recently, and those fans were not there when we were not winning games. And so obviously it's great to have a big crowd in terms of the money that brings in. But there is an annoyance to having a queue for the toilet and a queue for the pies. And we both sat there and said to ourselves, did we prefer it when we were rubbish and there was no one here and we had this place to ourselves? Maybe a little bit. But if the pie queues are extended in League One, then I want relegation straight back to League Two immediately.
It's such a weird thing. And this isn't promotion relegation related, but the Richmond Kickers just started their USL League One season and attendance has been excellent. They've sold out, I think, their first two games, which isn't always the case. And it's amazing to see that many people in the stands and kids running around and lines for everything. And at the same time, there are now lines for everything. And it is annoying to wait 15 minutes through a game to get a beer. But then you think, but then there's more money and more people are interested. It's a strange trade-off. I think ultimately, Graham, I'm going to assume that you are happier to be promoted than to stay in the division you were in.
Absolutely, because Stirling Albion, not to bore you here, but this is kind of us going back to our natural level. We are... This season, we were probably the biggest team in League Two, the biggest club. And so we're going back to a division where I think we're more naturally at home. But we'll see how that goes. I look forward to a difficult 23-24 season.
Well, we are going to make this like micro-specific to you this episode, because one of my final questions, Graham, if not my final question, is if Stirling Albion were to take the money they're going to make, the extra money, maybe a new sponsor comes in, a little bit more money, is there a player, you said you were watching some of the teams you've been playing, is there one player that you would be most excited if they were to sign, a realistic signing from your previous level? And then secondly, if they were going to spend some of that money on infrastructure, on stadium improvements, training ground, whatever it may be, what would make you the happiest? How does Graham come away from this with a player that makes him feel like things are going to be okay and an improvement to the facilities that makes him think, okay, we're making smart choices here?
So the player is a young winger called Jack Healy, who plays for East Fife. We need a replacement for Kai Fotheringham. We never really replaced him, even though we were able to win the title. We were kind of fighting through matches. Every game was a bit of a slog. So we need someone, a winger, who can take the ball, beat a man, put a cross in, put a shot into the top corner. Jack Healy looked like that player for East Fife. East Fife don't really have... This is very capitalist of me and opportunistic. East Fife don't have a lot of money right now. I feel like it could be easy pickings to go and get Jack Healy. Another player in that league, Charlie Riley, was...
No market value, according to Transfer Market. So there you go.
He scored a couple of belters against us this season, so I imagine he's worth something at the very least, even if Transfer Market hasn't noted it down. But yeah, Charlie Riley, I wonder if he has a transfer value, because he has been the best player in the division all season. I think he's going to Dundee, so I think he's going to quite a bigger club than Stirling Albion. But for whatever reason, if that deal was to collapse and he wanted to stay close to home or something, I would very much like to see Charlie Riley play for Stirling Albion. In terms of infrastructure changes, I think I've said this before, I just want somewhere to get a beer. Like, there's nowhere at Stirling Albion to get a beer. You're not allowed to have a drink in the stands in Scotland. It's against the law, unfortunately. We're still banned since Celtic Rangers fans invaded the pitch in the 1980s. Yes, the 1980s, that ban is still in place. But you are allowed to have like a social club outside the stadium or whatever. And a lot of clubs do have that. And I'm always very jealous when I go to those stadiums and their fans can come out the pub, having had a drink, and then go and watch the game, and then go back in at halftime or at full time. So I would like to build basically a pub. Let's build Paddy's Pub at Stirling Albion. It's what we're going to use the money for.
Ruthven's Pub?
Yeah, why not?
All right, I like it. All right, so we've got a plan for Stirling. We've got the benefits and drawbacks to promotion. A random one, Graham, before we go. Burnley getting promoted this season. it is not the Burnley that we have come to expect in years past under Sean Dyche, with sort of very defensive, you concede low percentage shots from the like pre-approved angles, and you frustrate teams, and then you hit on the break. Under Vincent Kompany, it's been much more expansive, much more exciting. Do you have any expectations for them in the coming Premier League campaign, one way or the other?
I feel like they're going to be a bit of a Sheffield United. So people will remember when Sheffield United came up to the Premier League under Chris Wilder. They got a lot of praise for the way they played. I think a lot of teams were maybe taken by surprise by them. They did this like overlapping centre-back thing under Chris Wilder. And a lot of opponents, it took them a while to get to grips with that. But once they did, they really got to grips with it, and they sank like a stone. And Sheffield United did actually just about stayed up in their first season. And I kind of expect this is the way it will go for Burnley. But I do look through that squad, and in terms of the talent, even though they've had some good players on loan from Man City, I forget his name, is it Harwood Bellis, on loan from Man City, defender. I can't imagine he'll be staying at Burnley permanently.
Probably not.
But even if they're able to use the loan market, I look at that squad and think, they're still kind of relying on Ashley Barnes to do a lot for them. So I kind of expect they'll start well and then slowly fade over the course of the season unless they spend some of that money.
Here we are. All right, Graham, any other thoughts on promotion? I think we'll do a relegation-specific episode maybe next week, and the potential benefits, but mostly the drawbacks to relegation. Anything else on promotion, Graham?
I think it just says a lot about my general demeanor as a person that the thrill of promotion has lasted approximately like 2 days, and now I'm just worried about playing in a higher league and losing every week.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is how long, because I know you are you, so there is that. But I was wondering that how long that thrill lasts before you're immediately moving to like, okay, but now we got to get ready for the next season. Because I think my guess would be, like, my wife, I would look to as an example of, she would be excited for about 20 minutes, and then I think start looking at like, oh no, we've got to do this, we've got to change this, this isn't going to be good enough, oh no, and like would then already be, I think by the next day, very apprehensive about the season to come.
So I started having those discussions with my mates at the game before we'd even won the title, going, this player can't, he's been good in League 2, but he just can't play in League 1, we're going to need to replace him. And then on Saturday night, very much I was having that discussion on Pie and Bovril, which is kind of the Scottish football Reddit, I think I might have mentioned that before. Saturday night I was having discussion with people about how we're going to have to improve greatly to even survive or have a chance of surviving in League 1.
It's all relative, isn't it? You like dogs can live in whatever setting you put them into. They don't really have the object permanence. So if you like give them a cardboard box to live in, they're fine. You give them a gigantic backyard to live in, they're fine. And it does feel like football fan brain is the same, that you're in one division, you move up to the next. We're going to find all the same problems. We're going to find all the same reasons for anxiety.
Nothing has changed.
Yeah, nothing's changed. So in that way, also a positive and a negative to promotion. But Graham, you have been just a positive on this episode. Thank you for bringing your personal experience, but also some research to this episode. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Taylor Rockwell. And I would say good luck to Richmond Kickers in winning promotion at some point in the future. But
we'll see. We'll see one day.
Yeah, soccer.
USL, I think that might be on the plans for the relative near future, emphasizing relative, because that could be 5 years and that could be 50 years. One or the other. We'll see. Listeners, thank you all so much for joining us this week. Always fun to talk 101 with my friend Graham. Hopefully you all feel the same. And if you do, then tune in next week for another episode. For now, thanks so much for listening.